Jack Llewellyn with the Chamber of Commerce. I'm here with Brandon Mancini, CEO of As Mercy Common Spirit. How should I ask that?
Sure thing. Common Spirit Mercy Hospital. So thank you, Jack, for having me here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for, you know, carving out some time. I know we've been kind of hitting and missing is just trying to coordinate schedules. But I first want to say thank you for everything you're doing out at Common Spirit Mercy.
Sure. Yes, thrilled to be here. I've been here for a little over a year now, started October of last year, and truly grateful to be here in Durango and part of the Mercy team.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy when you say a year. I'm going, that's already?
Yeah, it's gone fast. It's we're so fortunate because we have a highly engaged team at Mercy, highly engaged physicians, and certainly highly engaged community. And so, as I mentioned, truly grateful to be there.
Yeah, and time flies when you're having fun.
Sure thing.
You know, full disclosure too, you're also on the chamber board.
Correct.
And appreciate you doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the work that you've done with the Chamber of Commerce is truly phenomenal. I really believe it's a one-stop shop for all things business. And so if I have any questions, as I've quickly grown to love the community of Durango here, it's a lot of the work that I've seen through the Chamber of Commerce and just getting out and getting to know everybody.
Well, you know, somebody one time had said to me how did they phrase it? You're like the center hub on a wheel. You know, bicycle, and you've got all the connections. And then she said the phrase is, you just make it happen. You know, and it's my staff, you know, with Kim and Jennifer and now Madison, just incredible individuals and that truly care about the community and our members. So, I invite people, if you ever need anything, give the chamber a call. We've walked people through how to use a Keurig coffee maker in their VRBO to just a lot of other things. But first off, I want to ask you the groundbreaking with the new medical office and surgical center. I attended the groundbreaking ceremony, which was just an amazing experience, and I really appreciated the Southern Ute drummers that were there. That was very moving. But talk about the surgical center.
Sure. Yeah, happy to speak to that. So Mercy Hospital, obviously, we've been here in the community for 141 years. Set up our campus right now in the Three Springs area. It's been over 17 years right now. One of the things that I found really impressive is just, you know, our work with the Southern Ute tribe. So Eddie Box Jr., before the hospital was built on the where it currently is in Three Springs right now, came out and blessed the land. And he said that there was this giant eagle that flew overhead. And, you know, just how special that was, I think it was close to 20 years ago. And so as we embarked on our new groundbreaking, I really look at it as a ground honoring ceremony. We invited Matthew Box, who's Eddie's son and the Sundance chief with the Southern Ute tribe to join us, as part of the ceremony. And, also obviously had, you know, representation, you know, from our hospital and the number of community members as well. Mm-hmm. I think we had 7,500 people attend, and it's really the kind of the next chapter in, providing healthcare for our community.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And just, I remember when I was actually a Cub Scout years ago, obviously, about 50 years ago, if not more. And I remember first time hearing drummers at it was a big scouting, I think they call it a powwow, and just how moving that was. And the same thing, it just resonated, and the traditions of what the Native American culture brings. Now, what exactly will be in the medical office and surgical center? And it's located just kind of north of the main building.
Absolutely. Yeah. I say, if you're walking outside Mercy Hospital and you're walking up to Home Slice Pizza, it's just on the left up there on top of the hill. And the reason that we're starting with the new medical office building is our current medical office building is about 95% full. And as we continue to grow and serve our community and really our region, you know, we serve close to 200,000 people throughout each year, and not only specific to Durango, but the region at large. We need to continue to grow. And so the second floor of the building will be a medical office building space, and the first floor of the building will be a new ambulatory surgery center. We'll have three operating rooms, two procedure rooms, with space for a sixth room that will ultimately either be an additional OR or procedure room based on how the volume grows in time. In the two procedure rooms, we'll be doing GI procedures. And so as we know here in our community, that's a huge need. And so being able to more than double the capacity that we have for GI is great. Mm-hmm. And we're excited to be able to have this opportunity. They've been moving quick. They ask me every couple of days, when's the snow coming? We're ready to go. We're prepared and have everything ready to go in the event that snow hits us pretty soon.
Yeah. So with is that outpatient surgical center then?
Correct.
Okay.
So yep, it'll be an outpatient surgical center, and it's not to take all the outpatient surgery we have at Mercy and bring it over to a new surgery center. It's really a one-stop shop for patients that come in, you know, what we refer to as lower acuity procedures that don't need to be done in a hospital. Having it be done in an ambulatory surgery center it's convenient for patients and just a better option for all. It also allows us the opportunity to bring new services to our community that we may not have here or expand on existing services as well. So that'll be great. We're excited about it.
Yeah, and when you mentioned GI, I'm assuming that colonoscopies,
screening colonoscopies,
or endoscopes, things of that nature.
Yep. Exactly. So screening colonoscopies, you know, really the full gamut of all GI procedures. So yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah, somebody who's had, I think, five of those, especially over the years, it's like, yeah, you know, sometimes the waiting list can be a little lengthy. So that's a great addition to the community. And again, the responsiveness of Mercy seeing that and saying, okay, well, we are identifying the need, so let's, you know, add the necessary, equipment and services.
That's exactly it. There's really three parts to it. You look at the total number of you know, physicians and APPs, you know, collectively we call providers. You have total space, really the operations of it, and then you look at the support staff. So if one physician that recently left our community and decided he wanted to come back, which is great. So Dr. Todd Shear, a number of people know in the community, has returned and just started with us this past week here, and there's several other people that we know on the Front Range and neighboring communities that may be interested in coming up here as well too. So by the time that the new surgery center is open, which will likely be spring of 2025, you know, we're confident that we'll have the physician team to support that growth. We're expanding our office support staff, and then, you know, doubling the number of rooms. We have two endoscopy rooms right now and adding two more, so we have four total. Mm-hmm. That helps us just continue to serve the community.
Yeah, well, in serving the community too, we had the tragic shootings recently, and I can only imagine the stress and what that does to a hospital, especially when we don't see those often in our community. Thank goodness.
Right.
How did that impact the physicians, the staff, and the responsiveness of them?
Sure. It hits hard. It's the simplest way to put it. It hits hard, you know, every which direction. You know, when a traumatic event occurs, it really hits you right into your soul. So fortunately, we have a fantastic trauma team at Mercy that includes our ER staff, our ER physicians, our OR team. The first night of the shootings, we had multiple people arrive on site to provide support within, you know, 10, 15 minutes, even faster than that in some areas. Mm-hmm. And we were ready to care for the patients that we treated. And myself, our CNO, when we heard what occurred, we quickly made it in as well, too, just to be there to support our teams. And then, you know, unfortunately, we had an additional shooting the next night as well, too. So when people are, you know, motivated and ready to come back to work and continue to do what they do, to have this unfortunate event happen again, it's hard. But our team is just the compassion they bring with the dedication is phenomenal. And so we're fortunate, you know, while we're a level 3 trauma center and, you know, have capabilities to take care of, you know, gunshot wounds, you know, stabbings, car accidents. We see a lot of ski accidents. it's you know, we function as a level one trauma center would to stabilize patients on a regular basis.
Right, stabilize, and then obviously then transport them to, you know, upper care. Mm-hmm. For lack of words, I'm not a
yeah.
physician or a doctor, nor do I play one on radio. But and your background is EMT. Correct.
Yeah.
Paramedic.
That's as an EMT. Correct. Okay. Yep. So I started my career over 20 years ago working as a EMT at a level one trauma center up in Denver. Mm-hmm. And throughout my career, I've always focused on building trauma programs. So worked largely at level one trauma centers, recently stood up a burn service in Richmond, Virginia. Wow. But it's something that's a huge passion of mine, emergency medicine, trauma, and spent a lot of my time working with behavioral health centers as well, too. And so, mm-hmm. you know, collectively, those are three, you know, key areas of focus for us in our community that are only going to grow. And so we're making sure we're prepared and ready for that.
Well, you know, I just want to compliment you, Brandon, because I hear your resume, so to speak, with all of the foundation of your experiences, and what a how fortunate, you know, everyone at Mercy, because you've been there, done that, you've experienced it, and now to be able to say, you know, at the administrative level, and then be able to empathize with those that are the boots on the ground, for lack of words, that are, you know, limiting. You say, I understand. And
right.
You probably truly do.
It's, you know, every location is different. And, you know, here in Durango, we're proud that we're different than everywhere else. And I absolutely love it. It's a fantastic community, fantastic city to be part of. But there are some things that carry over. You know, if you have multiple gunshot wounds, you know, that come in at once, you know, having previously been in situations like that, mm-hmm. you know how to respond, you know what to do, you know, your brain almost kind of goes into autopilot. And this was my first experience working with the team through this, and just so incredibly grateful for the care team that we have in place for that.
Yeah. Well, so. And it's, you know, again, just speaking volume, not to make light of it, I'm thinking in my mind, I'm going, you know, all right, scrub in, you know, put some gloves on. We need you over here type of thing. But, and again, and I have to say, you know, I was at the hospital for a surgical procedure, and I tell everybody I took out, apparently I didn't need that 8 inches of my intestine, but, and so I just, to hear what your folks are going through, the nurses came in one day and they said, we just voted you the best patient. And I said, why's that? And they said, well, you're not trying to bite us. You're not spitting on us. You're not trying to wander off. You're not being belligerent. You're not cussing. And I looked at her and I said, what are you talking about? You guys don't have that. And she said, oh, yeah, we do.
Yeah.
And we have like four patients in other rooms right now that were experiencing those things. And I just thought, that is so wrong, you know, and that's kind of ironic that I got voted the best. I just got up and did my laps like I was supposed to. 18 is a mile. I know that by heart now. But no, Brandon, I just, you know, the amount of care and truly how your staff truly care about individuals was amazing to me.
Yeah, it's challenging. You know, the one thing that COVID brought were, you know, challenges, you know, on a number of different fronts, and, you know, in the walls of the hospital as well too. You know, patients arrive and they're sicker, and you know, oftentimes are can sometimes be aggravated as well too. And so, you know, our team, you know, leans in, continues to provide support, care for, you know, our mm-hmm. patients. And Colorado Hospital Association actually just recently put out some data to say, you know, the increase in both physical and verbal abuse on healthcare workers is unfortunately grown a lot over the course of the past few years. Yeah. And so the fact that our team every day continues to show up and care for our patients is great.
Yeah, well, and I think it's, you know, and you mentioned since COVID, I think we always, a lot of people will use COVID as an excuse, but I do feel like since COVID, tensions are higher, definitely, whether you're driving in a car, you're waiting in line at the bank or whatever, and kind of this, you know, I need it now, and it's all of that. Let's all just take a big, deep breath. And I think social media is the culprit of a lot of it. But take that big, deep breath. What common spirit and what that has brought to Mercy.
Sure.
Because, you know, it's there's more in the name change, you know, and the amount of resources that come with that. So
sure.
Tell me a little bit more about Common Spirit and why the shift then from Centura to Common Spirit and what all took place.
Yeah, happy to speak to that. So I think the key thing to understand is, you know, for 141 years we've been Mercy Hospital. I think at one point we changed our name to, you know, Mercy Regional Medical Center. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people realize that when you hear, say, medical center, you don't always identify with being a hospital. And so we're Mercy Hospital. About 27 years ago, two parent sponsors came together, Catholic Health Initiatives and Adventist Health Systems, and they formed the branded entity that is Centura Health. That was comprised of a joint operating agreement between the two national sponsors. And over time, the two parent sponsors made a decision that they basically didn't need a separate branded entity or joint operating agreement to manage the hospitals, and wanted to manage the hospitals directly themselves. So what was Catholic Health Initiatives has become Common Spirit Health. When they merged with Dignity a few years back, the name changed from Catholic Health Initiatives to Common Spirit. And on the other side, Adventist Health Systems was rebranded to Advent Health. And so that's why you're seeing those two names in the news. But our parent sponsor still remains the same. It is Common Spirit. Mm-hmm. And really what it does is it provides, you know, more access and structure at the national level with all 142 hospitals. So there's additional resources and as we move forward with that.
Okay. And again, here locally, we have wonderful, you know, physicians, a lot of the same faces. Nothing's changed in that manner.
Absolutely. Yeah. The care team that we have at Mercy Hospital, you know, remains the same. The leadership team that we have at Mercy Hospital remains the same. The care that we provide the community certainly, you know, remains the same. You know, we've always been a faith-based, not-for-profit healthcare facility, and obviously, you know, we'll continue to mm-hmm. to be the same. You know, what changes is, you know, the structure with our leaders in terms of who they reach out to and how that's set up at the national level. So, you know, I previously worked for a health system that had 186 hospitals nationwide, and, you know, there's a lot of support that you have being part of a national health system, and mm-hmm. there's strength in that.
Yeah. Well, and having the extra, I'm going to say, support and resources, but, you know, one thing that I've seen and heard about in the community is the cardiovascular services and what that has changed, and a lot of it seems to have changed again since 2020, but what's changed now out at the hospital? And what's the future?
Really, yeah, I agree. It's multiple service lines. And so most notably with the cardiovascular service line, and I can speak to areas of growth and others, a huge focus of mine over the course of the past year has been on recruitment. So as people know, you know, through COVID, it was widely known in our community, we lost a number of different, you know, physicians and APPs. People had left our community. And not only have we really filled each one of those different positions, but we found people that want to be here long term. And that's exactly what, you know, Durango, La Plata County, the region at large really need. So specific with cardiovascular services, if you look at total number of employed providers, we unfortunately got down to 1.5 a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 8 right now.
Oh, wow.
So that includes interventional cardiology, general cardiology, and our APP coverage, 3 APPs, and 5 other physicians. And we have 2.5 other positions that we're looking to fill right now, and very confident that we've got top talent to fill those. Have 6 different interested people to fill those 2 positions, and all mm-hmm. would be excellent candidates for our community. But one of the things that we are doing with this is we're bringing new services to our community that we historically haven't done. So endovascular procedures, basically if you have a clot in your leg that mm-hmm. you need to go in and pull out to prevent you from having a pulmonary embolism, like a clot in your lung, or worst case scenario, a stroke. You know, historically, those would be procedures that we'd have to send out for, and send to another facility. We'd stabilize a patient instead. Well, now we can do that locally here. Dr. Jad Raful, who's an interventional cardiologist, joined our team earlier this year, has been working with Dr. Mark Stauffer, and they've created a fantastic program for us to care for our community.
Well, and that's so encouraging to hear, you know, and it's, I just, you know, again, as I'm getting older, it's kind of interesting how the aches and pains and the other ailments, you know, I'm going to see Matt Smith.
Sure.
You know, for a shoulder thing.
Yep.
You know,
he's,
I got
he's
that
the best.
Coming up.
Yeah.
Went up and introduced myself at one of the groundbreakings, and I told him, I said, you don't know me yet, but you're going to know me.
Yeah.
And he laughed. He's like, oh, who are you? And chatted with him a little bit. But again, going back to the cardiology, I mean, that's to me, as we have the aging population
mm-hmm.
and all of us aren't getting any younger, the
right.
needs for that, you know, and procedures.
It is. And we're, you know, similar to what I mentioned with the GI piece before, you've got the three different components. You have the physicians, you have the support staff, and you have the operations, really the infrastructure as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, while on the GI side, you know, we have our new medical office building. We have the surgery center with the procedure rooms. For the cardiovascular side, we're upgrading our cath lab. And so we're building out one of the rooms, putting in new technology, and so we can just continue to care for our community. It's, you know, one of the pieces of equipment we've had in there for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. I'll keep it at that, and needed an upgrade. And so it's great that we'll be able to add that. And we have plans underway to build out the space even more so. By having the new medical office building, it allows us to you know, put plans in place for our cardiology office and cancer services and other high-end services for our community so we can continue to yeah. expand and grow.
And I'm going to also compliment you on your hospice care. My mom lived here for 10 years, and she passed away about 5-6 years ago, but the hospice was wonderful. And I remember we did palliative care, we did hospice, and the hospice nurse came in, and she said to my mom, well, Judy, we're looking, you know, hospice for you. And she goes, hospice? I'm not ready to die. And she
yeah.
goes, do you want your son to have access to resources for your best care? And she goes, well, of course. And she said, well, that's why. And she goes, we'll kick you out of hospice as you know,
sure.
depending on how your condition. But you have a wonderful hospice program.
It's really fantastic. You know, we have new members, you know, stop by Mercy, and, you know, we tour around our campus. One of the first places that I always want to go is the hospice. And people say, seriously, you know, hospice of all places? And I say, you know, trust me, it's really a shining star. And
yeah.
and it's really through the work of so many community members that we have it. It was, you know, yeah. a community-driven, you know, campaign through the Mercy Foundation. And I really have a lot of residents here in the Durango community to thank for it. So it's a,
yeah.
we have a fantastic team in place. Dr. Ann Rosignol, who's our medical director with our palliative care team, really, really does a fantastic job. So we're fortunate to have the
yeah.
Mercy Hospice on our
Absolutely.
Campus.
Absolutely. And again, just the level of care is just extraordinary. Now, looking to the future, what are things that you see needed at Mercy as well as, you know, within healthcare in general? What are, you know, we always hear we're a shortage of physicians, things of that nature. But, you know better than I do. What are the things that
yeah,
we need?
Yeah, the healthcare industry as a whole has significant challenges. You know, rising costs across the board. You look at pharmaceutical expense, supply chain expense, you know, unknown landscape in terms of just how reimbursement and everything, you know, will work in the coming years. So how we not only sustain what we have, but position ourselves for growth is going to be paramount to our success. And it really, really starts with workforce development and caring for our team. When you look at some of the national healthcare trends statewide, I think the average nursing vacancy rate is 28%. And
mm-hmm.
so that's, you know, 28% open positions for nursing positions.
Wow.
Statewide throughout all Colorado hospitals. And so to fill that, we've had to bring in, you know, contract labor or travel nurses, and it costs more to bring those nurses in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at Mercy, we're fortunate that we have no contract labor at all for nurses now. Through COVID, we did, and we've gotten to a point where that's zero right now. And our nursing vacancy rate is 0.33%. It basically is
wow.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's
fully
it's
staffed.
Fully staffed, 100%. Uh-huh. Now, that's not necessarily the case when it comes to our phlebotomy positions, food and nutrition, and some of the other support services that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge is, you know, workforce development and affordable housing. So I've recently gotten to know Jen Lopez and learned of the great work she's done here in our community with
yeah.
Best Western Development and the Adventure Inn that's going to be opening soon. And so we're really working closely with that team on just planning for the future, because that'll continue to help us support mm-hmm. Mercy. And the, we have close to 1,000 people that work at Mercy, but help position us for the future ahead.
Well, and also, and correct me if I'm wrong, but working with like Fort Lewis College, Pueblo Community College, you know, their nursing programs, and having almost, I'm going to say, that workforce pipeline and getting people to understand what is involved in that profession and how needed it is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Beth Dunn works really closely with the Fort Lewis College team and the nursing program that we have underway to train for staff, as well as Pueblo Community College. But we're starting earlier. Dr. Karen Chesser and I have connected in mm-hmm. Supporting the healthcare. I was going to say, you know, campaign, but it's the cohort, the 4-year plan through Durango High School, and that you know starts at even a younger age, so people understand, you know, what it means to be part of a hospital and what options you have in healthcare. And providing training along the way.
Well, and I just, you know, I look back on it and can be so rewarding, you know, with the healthcare, I'm going to say the healthcare profession, because you look at, one, the job security.
Sure.
Two, you probably have pretty good access to healthcare if you're in healthcare. You know, and just some of the different the benefits that come along with that. I'm sure stress levels can be high, but you can also, there's got to be such a portfolio, so to speak, of options if you
sure.
go into nursing.
I mean,
it could be, you know, geriatric, it could be, you know, ICU, you could be, you know, prenatal. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
It's great. So two thoughts on that. One is, you know, from an innovation standpoint, there's so much more you can do right now. So telehealth, specifically on the behavioral health side, you know, if you want to talk to somebody and you need, you know, support, you know, it's to a point right now where you don't have to necessarily wait for somebody to come meet with you. You know, you can beam into a camera and have the ability to talk to somebody as well. And so with the telehealth options available, it's opened up a number of new doors with healthcare. You also look at robotic surgery. We have a fantastic robotic surgery program at Mercy with the Da Vinci robots, as well as on the ortho side and the spine side, span navigation equipment, two different robots in place for knee procedures. And so that opens up a ton of other doors if you're interested in biomedical engineering and just being at the forefront of all healthcare. But one of the things you hit on, which I always think is interesting, you talk about healthcare workers and their access to healthcare. Healthcare workers are usually the worst patients. So they'll wait as long as possible before you want to go in to see a doctor or go in to see a hospital. But it's just kind of an ongoing joke there.
Like, I'll be fine.
I'm good. Yeah, just, I've got this.
It only hurts when I do this. Well, don't do that.
Well,
you mentioned the robotic, and when they did my intestinal surgery, it was with the robot, apparently.
Yep. Right.
I was asleep. I don't know.
Sure.
But Dr. Quayle had said, yeah, well, you did robotic. And I have 4 little incision marks and a bigger one where they pulled the spare part out. And I can't imagine having to be, and I use the term filleted open, to have that surgery, you know, 20 years ago. Because, you know, the recovery, and thank goodness for modern-day medicine and pain meds and things.
Sure.
But it was so less invasive.
That's exactly
and what
it.
That robotic, what robotics has done for the I want to say the industry, but for the medical profession.
Well, it helps on multiple fronts. So, you know, people always refer to it as MIS, you know, minimally invasive surgery. And yeah, it's just like you said, you know, very small incisions. And so if you have a smaller incision, it improves the recovery time
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's certainly better for the patient. It also helps our surgeons as well. So, you know, when you're working as a surgeon and you're hunched over, you know, and the stress that you have on your back, on your shoulders, on your neck, it's taxing in time. And if you can sit down on a console and have the care team, you know, with the patient, you know, during robotic surgery, you're finding that it preserves the time surgeons can practice, and mm-hmm. it's better for the surgeons as well too. So it really is better all around.
So playing Xbox, you know, could lead to a medical profession.
Absolutely.
Based on the finger dexterity of using the robotics.
Yep.
I'm kind of making light of that. But I do know people that say, just like flying drones and other, you know, professions, it's like, no, there is a linkage to that.
There absolutely is. It's just, obviously the way that society continues to progress, you know, so much more is becoming, you know, automated. And you know, the what you do from a tactile standpoint with your hands and how that controls things, you know, in a field, that's just the way that things are emerging.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, and again, I just, the recovery time, you know, I remember saying to Dr. Quayle, I said, well, I had 2 back surgeries last year. So, I'm in the hospital for a day or two and plan on 5, you know, and he goes, it's a lot more evasive, Jack. And I'm like, okay. And yes, it was. And, again, thanks to the nurses and just, the care and everything that that they all provided. And again, as a patient, you know, I'm not going to get all the details, but as a patient, you're like, oh, how do I do this? And they're like, Jack, you know, you might be a little embarrassed about XYZ, but we deal with this all day. What
exactly.
do you need?
Right.
You know, and, yep. and they just handle it with, you know, so I felt dignity, for a lack of words. And it just, again, if you're at all interested in getting into the medical profession, what would you recommend to somebody that's, you know, in middle school or high school or even has graduated and said, you don't want to do a career shift? What would you recommend to someone?
I think it's, you know, talking to anybody in the healthcare industry to understand why they got into healthcare. Mm-hmm. I think that's the most important piece. And we try really hard at Mercy to always communicate the why behind any decisions that we make, and it just helps put things into perspective. And so, you know, if you're even remotely interested, you know, having those conversations at a young age to say, you know, why did you decide to go into healthcare? You know, is your heart in it because you truly want to care for patients and you want to improve them on a daily basis? And then just to understand, you know, all aspects of what you can do. We have Susie Tipton, who's with our team. She's leads our education efforts. You know, we can, you know, have her sit down, any one of our leaders, you know, in the hospital sit down and just talk about all the different healthcare services that are not only available through Mercy, but really available in the community. And then as you go forward, if you say, man, I really love healthcare, but this may not be for me, but I'm thinking about something else. Those are conversations that I love to have with people. I've had a unique journey in my career, you know, working as an EMT and now being on the business side of things. Mm-hmm. There's just so many opportunities available.
Yeah, well, and I even look, you know, I mean, I remember talking to somebody that, you know, have a blood draw. And she, I said, well, how long you been here? And she said, oh, I've been here like 25 years or whatever it was. I went, wow. And she goes, yeah, it's a lot of blood draws, you know. And she goes, but, you know, been here and, you know, weathered storms, so to speak. And she goes, but I just love being a caregiver.
It's incredible. And that's one of the things that I absolutely love about the team that we have at Mercy. We're currently right now doing department rounds. We're meeting with each of the different departments. We're coming in nights, weekends, all hours of the day, and just spending time in our areas. And the time that people have worked at Mercy is incredible. 10 years, 20 years. We actually just had someone celebrate their 40th year anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Working at Mercy, and it's incredible.
Well, I remember, I keep talking about, well, I guess it's my show. I can talk about what I want, but but when I got cleared to eat whatever, and I was like, I go, we wouldn't recommend a hamburger or, you know, Mexican food right now, Jack, but, you know, soft food. And I ordered the potato soup,
mm-hmm.
and I got it, and it was really good. I was like, oh my god, I wanted seconds. I thought, no, give your tongue, give, you know, let your stomach and your intestines, you know, slowly ease back. But it was good.
We are so lucky. Yeah, we have a number of people that actually come to our cafeteria every single day. Uh-huh. For the food that we have, and it's Chef Mike does a fantastic job, our executive chef, and he previously worked at the Palace with Paul Gillos. Paul was the GM of the Palace, and he runs our food and nutrition team right now. And so, you know, what I've heard is the chicken and dumplings at the Palace were fantastic.
Yes.
And talking with Paul, he's like, well, that's what we serve at the hospital. I want to start branding that a little bit. Like, okay, we've got the Palace chicken and dumplings, like one night. The fish fry, I've heard about the burger night and all that. So
now you mentioned that. So can the public, I mean, and come to the cafeteria, and I guess what are the hours?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's 6 a.m. in the morning as we open for breakfast. Mm-hmm. I believe we close at about 9 a.m. every single day and then open again from lunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And so, yeah, lunch is, is very, very busy.
Yeah.
But yeah, on that note, it's interesting. So with lunch being so busy, it's great, obviously, for the community. It's great for our staff. It's great for physicians and everyone to come down. But in terms of how we give back and how we empower our teams, one of the things we recently launched was the idea of a lavender room. And I know this sounds unique. Mm-hmm. But what it is when nurses are stressed and they're working hard throughout the course of the day, you can take a break in the break room, but you know, you still sometimes have that stress. Or you go down to the cafeteria, and as you just mentioned, with you know, chicken and dumplings, the soup that we have, it's a busy place. And so we said, how can we put a place in the hospital where people can really decompress and focus on themselves? And so the idea of a lavender room is a room set up with dimly lit lights, a yoga mat, a massage chair, and fresh lavender that's brought in from a local farm here. And you can, you know, scan a QR code, reserve 20 minutes in the room, and it just really allows our care team to center themselves, kind of re-energize their soul as they go back to work. So it's been widely received. It's full almost every single day.
And I had no idea how much you give back.
It's incredible. This is one of the things that really makes me proud to work for Common Spirit. So our health equity and advancement grants, we have an opportunity where local nonprofits can apply, and we had 37 different nonprofits apply to receive funding and awarded it to 10 different groups locally, all groups that serve the underprivileged and, you know, complete diverse makeup of different organizations here in town. And we awarded over $500,000 to nonprofits in the Durango community.
Yeah, I had no idea. And I also learned about some of the recipients because, you know, I know about, you know, MANA and some of the other ones, but I had no idea and the expansiveness of what they do. I was honored to be in the room, honestly, to learn more.
The focus is, cancer services, you know, food security services, really a number of different organizations that just provide support for people in need. That's the one thing, you know, getting to know the Community Foundation and other community members. We have so many nonprofits in the area. And I really look at it as our opportunity as a, you know, regional, you know, healthcare leader of how we can continue to aggregate and support the local nonprofits here, but also, you know, showcase some of the best practices they have as well too.
Yeah. So in along the same line of, you know, giving pain forward and everything, I'm curious the amount of physicians that you've brought on and you know, keep everything going at Mercy. I guess the question, you know, things are going fairly well. Anything speak about, you know, other physicians and the ones that you have brought in and again, to keep that quality going.
It's a huge, huge passion of mine and, you know, was made clear to me when I started a little over a year ago as one of the greatest opportunities that we have at Mercy in our community. And so it's something I've personally led all of our recruitment efforts. And with that, so it's every service line across the board. Primary care, we were down about 52% in total primary care physicians over the course of the past few years. Well, right now we're not only fully staffed, but we're looking to expand and grow. We've brought a number of different people that have ties to either Durango or La Plata County. Absolutely love it here and spend most of their time outdoors enjoying all that Durango offers.
Yeah.
And so both our Horse Gulch location, Bayfield location, we're actually expanding the offices right now and looking to continue to bring additional people on. And that have a passion, you know, be it on, you know, like Dr. Goodpaster and diabetes education and behavioral health, a number of other things too.
And then
it's all service lines across the board. Pulmonology, we've brought on Dr. Aaron Crowley, a new pulmonologist, to join Dr. Holcomb with our team here. I mentioned how cardiovascular services has grown to 8 total physicians. Ortho continues to grow. We have someone else that's joined our bone health team, and so we can continue to focus on bone health. Dr. Greg Grenier, an upper extremity hand specialist, does a fantastic job. It's literally every service line across the board. We're in a better position than we were a few years ago.
Yeah, and it just, again, continues to improve and get better. And again, if somebody has a question, because before we went on the air, I was telling you, one thing I've learned in this job, there's, you know, three sides to every story. There's this side, there's your story, their story, and somewhere in between lies the truth, so to speak. If someone has, you know, oh, I don't understand my bill, or I have an issue with XYZ, are there protocols, and do you welcome people to come in and say, we need to, in order to improve, we got to hear about things?
Just call me. I always have to be part of the discussion. We've spent a lot of time working with the La Plata Health Improvement Coalition and SOAR, the Southwest Opiate Reduction District, and really continue to lean into, you know, community-led forums and discussions, so we can continue to tell the story work we have underway, but also identify opportunities. We know mm-hmm. that there's still a ton of opportunity for our region, and work with the community members, you know, with each of those organizations for us to advance. But I'm personally happy to speak with anybody as well. You know, I have an open door policy, you know, always happy to sit down and have a conversation to understand what's working and what opportunities we have.
Yeah. Well, it hurts when I just, I'm not going there. That would be like a 3-hour show to
go.
Get through all
That's
of my
right.
medical, you know, my medical record looks like a rap sheet for me. But all right. So we only have a couple minutes left. And what do you do for fun?
Oh my gosh. When I moved here last October, I was thrilled to see that we're, you know, 30 minutes from Perg, and it just was like a dream come true. And everyone said, well, as much as you enjoy winters, just wait till the summers. And like, sure enough, like unfortunately there's too much to do. I went out and I got a mountain bike through a Devo swap, hit up, you know, paddle boarding, all the trails. And I feel like I've just barely scratched the surface. So I love stand-up paddle boarding, love open water swimming. Certainly excited about the ski season ahead. Just there's a lot to do here.
Yeah, there definitely is. And as you said, you know, trying to fit it all in, you know, and the self-care, you know, and I do. I tell people as a mental floss every day, but again, I said this all through COVID, every task force call we had, I said, let's not forget about the mental impacts. And I want to remind everyone that if you're feeling down, you're not alone. And there's plenty of help opportunities out there, whether, you know, Mercy, Access, you know, independent clinicians. Just make sure you reach out. And I just, again, almost out of time here, but I just really appreciate everything you've brought to Mercy since your arrival.
Well, thank you, Jack. I appreciate it. And yeah, I think as we go into next year, mental health will be something we continue to look at. I sat as a panelist with Bodie Miller a few weeks ago. We've got some great ideas, so it'll be good.
Will you come back?
Absolutely.
Really?
Looking forward to it. Sure thing.
This wasn't that painful, was it?
That's it. No, this is good. All Thanks, right. Jack.